Five, four, three, two, one.
What's the situation, Captain?
This is Situation Fluxus, a weekly one-hour program focused on jazz and improvised music, news, radio, conversations, and more. Thank you for tuning in to Situation Fluxus on WGXC 90.7 FM, listener-supported radio for open ears in upstate New York. I'm your host, Cheryl Kay. Let us dig into the headlines. The Ed Neumeister Quartet, led by trombonist Ed Neumeister, with woodwind player Scott Robinson and bassist Ken Filiano, performs at Thursdays at Silvana in South Harlem, New York City, on Thursday, September 30th. For more information, silvana-nyc.com. An evening of jazz and spoken word with author, poet, painter, and co-creator of Deaf Poetry Jam, Danny Simmons, and legendary award-winning jazz bassist Ron Carter on Saturday, October 2nd at the Jamaica Center for Arts and Learning in Queens, New York. From the publication Downbeat, quote, "In spring 2022, Simmons' residency will culminate in a reunion performance of the original cast of HBO's Deaf Poetry Jam and a 50th anniversary gala for JCAL with Simmons as the artist honoree." For more information, jcal.org. Vocalist Libby York performs on Tuesday, October 5th at Mesro in New York City with pianist John DiMartino and bassist Desron Douglas. Her latest release is 2014's Memoir. For more information, smallslive.com. Coming up at Birdland in New York City, Inside Birdland Jazz Club, bassist Ron Carter's Golden Striker Trio performs October 5th through the 9th, and Inside Birdland Theater, the Don Braden Quartet on October 8th and 9th. For more information, birdlandjazz.com. Pianist and composer Craig Taborn's new conceptual work, 60 by 60, is available now worldwide and free. 60 pieces of music in 60 minutes, each about 60 seconds in length. The pieces relate to one another only in seeking to explore how malleable the perception of a 60-second span of time might be when subject to different sound worlds in succession. For more information, the number 60, letter X, and the word 60.com or pyroclasticrecords.com. After nearly six decades, a private recording of a rare nightclub performance of saxophonist John Coltrane's magnum opus, A Love Supreme, is set for release on October 8th. Fully titled A Love Supreme, Live in Seattle, it was recorded in late 1965 on the culminating evening of a historic week-long run at the Penthouse in Seattle, Washington. It's a musical revelation of historic importance, capturing Coltrane as he began to explore his classic quartet of pianist McCoy Tyner, drummer Elvin Jones, and bassist Jimmy Garrison with saxophonists Pharoah Sanders and Carlos Ward, and bassist Donald Raphael Garrett. And new releases that are out now. Drummer Jared Schoenig's Two Takes Volume 1 Quintet and Two Takes Volume 2 Big Band on Anzac, multi-reed player and composer Henry Threadgill Zewid with Poof on Pi Recordings, organist Joey DeFrancesco's More Music on Mac Avenue, trombonist Niels Langgren's Nature Boy on Act Music, and coming out on October 1st, The Cookers with Lookout on Gearbox. All news items have been gathered from various media sources. For the latest updates, contact the source, venue, or business. Remember, I'm just the messenger. I had a conversation with Tyron Grillo, author of the blog Between Sound and Space, ECM Records and Beyond, and Steph Schlesel and Paul Aquero, founder and editor, and manager and editor, respectively, of the Free Jazz Collective. Our conversation comes in two parts, so here is part one. Thank you all for joining me this morning on Situation Fluxus.
Oh, well, thank you. It's nice to be here.
Yes, likewise.
Thanks for having us.
It's probably no surprise to the three of you that I am an early riser, and I do my best work in the morning, thinking and planning and scheduling. What time of day do you start writing? Let's start with Paul.
When I can. It's interesting. I say that when I was writing my dissertation, it was the morning. No doubt about it. I'd wake up, I'd feel ready to write. But now you never know when a review will start coming out.
Go ahead, Steph.
I'm really not a morning person. I'm an evening person. So between 11 and 1 a.m. is my listening and reviewing time, usually.
Did you say 1 a.m.?
Yes.
God love you. And Tyron.
My writing time used to be late in the evening, very similar to Steph's schedule, until I had children. And then the mornings became my prime time for listening and writing, which it still is.
Yes. A number of my contacts and people I've interviewed who have children are up early. They do their correspondences before they have to either homeschool or send those little ones off, right, to daycare or whatever.
Exactly.
Yeah. Percentage-wise, about how many releases do you solicit to review versus what just shows up in the mail?
Steph, I think we could probably say most of the stuff comes to us. Would you agree?
Yes.
Because I'm specialized in ECM records, I have a working relationship with the label and its distributors, so I get those automatically. So it's sort of both for me. I'm seeking them out, but they're also sent to me. But I think otherwise, I would agree with Paul's assessment that most things are sent. And of course, I don't have time as much as I would like to listen to and write about everything, but I try my best.
Yeah.
We made the count. I think we have about more than 2,000 releases that we receive every year that fall within the definition of the music that we review. So free jazz and free improvisation, more than 2,000. And obviously we cannot review everything. So we have to make a selection to start with. But most of the music we receive, but not every label is as professional and disciplined as you might expect. So even musicians who get fantastic reviews back from us do not necessarily send us their next album. So it's very unpredictable. Sometimes we have to chase them to get their new material when we see that they have something available. That happens too.
Yeah. Same thing happens for radio programmers. Most of the things that I play, I get. I solicit very little because I just get so much material. And it's the same thing. You might get the release of an artist 1 minute, but you don't get their next one or the one after that.
Yeah. So you sometimes you selectively chase something or go to Bandcamp and download or something like that. But Yeah, I'd say that we're all kind of in the same boat.
Yes, and I think we're all linked on Facebook as well. So very often they announce new albums coming out on Facebook. So if we haven't received it, we can ask them to send us a copy, not to forget us in the process.
Right. Tyron, you specifically write about ECM releases and Stefan Paul, free jazz and avant-garde releases. What are the burdens and what is the satisfaction of having a niche writing assignment? Tyron, I'd like to start with you.
I think for me, it is being able to give back what the label has given to me. I listen very broadly in many other genres, labels, time periods, etc. But ECM has been very much a touchstone in my listening life and also in my personal life and just development as a human being. So it has been at the center of my writing life since I began reviewing music. So to me, that satisfaction is derived from, again, returning something abstract as it might be to what the label has given me in its output.
How about Steph?
Yeah, I mean, even if we work in a very small universe of free improvisation and free jazz, I think there's still a lot coming up. And I'm surprised on a very frequent basis about the creativity of the music, even within this small environment of music. I like to be surprised by new things. And so even if it's a small niche, there's still a lot of room for creativity and improvement. That's what it's all about. It's about, you know, breaking boundaries, coming with new things, new perspectives on sound and timbre and how music is organized, how instruments can interact, and even now with new technology, with electronics and all that. So I think it's fascinating. And I think that's where I get the energy from, is, you know, enjoying and being surprised and taken out of my comfort zone on a regular basis.
Paul?
Yeah, I think I kind of build on what Steph just said. Being kind of picked up and transported away from where you are at the moment is really, really what this music can do, because it's so unpredictable. And I think you spend time listening to it, listening for things that you think might happen and maybe they don't. And it's that discovery and surprise that keeps it interesting, fun, and enjoyable. I think it's even hard to say that it's a niche. Like I think that there's just so many different facets to it. There's, you know, rhythmically based free jazz, and then there's completely kind of diffuse free music, and just there's so many different possibilities within it.
Yeah. Steph and Paul, the Free Jazz Collective has a stable of volunteer writers. What's your criteria for writing for it?
Willingness. I think that's the one. It's, as you just mentioned, it's volunteer. This is a passion, right? This is something that our writers want, that people want to do. They want to express themselves about the music. Something, the music has given them something and they want to somehow share that. And I think that's really kind of my first criteria, is we want people that want to write. I think, Steph, I think you have some thoughts on this, I'm sure.
Yeah, no, I think this is that we are always positive in our and constructive in our reviews. So we don't, you know, we don't have negative reviews about new music. Even for the moment, we want, when you write a review, you have to listen to it, you know, dozens of times to make a good quality review. So if the music is not to your taste, this is not a fun experience. So it's better that it's nice music. And because it's a niche, so we want to point readers to the right places. And I think most of the reviewers have that attitude. I think this is one of the criteria that we use. And at the same time, I think most of the reviewers also have a musical background. They're either musicians themselves or, you know, have performed in bands in the past. And I think that gives them also the technical knowledge and understanding of music to be able to write with, you know, competence.
Yeah. I might add to that.
Yes, please.
Maybe Paul and Steph, you might agree with this. One thing that I love about writing when I'm writing about free jazz is that it actually frees me up as a writer as well. I'm going to write very differently about an Evan Parker record than I am about a standards album, right? Mm. And I love the license that a free jazz album gives me just as a responder and a listener to also do away with convention in my words at the same time.
Yeah, I think something that Steph wrote one time, I think there was a complaint. There was some sort of like complaint comment on a post, and they were complaining about how something was written. And I believe Steph wrote, well, you know, free jazz, free writing. Mm. That's what it's about. But you're right. I mean, I think it asks you to, the music kind of asks you to reach for new adverbs, new adjectives. And you don't always want to use the same thing over and over again. You don't want your writing to become stale, just like you don't want the music to become stale. Right.
Exactly.
Wow. To Steph and Paul, I just want to, I like what you say in the About Us page on your website. We only review albums of which we like the music, unless it's a really bad album by a great musician. But that does not happen often. But you also say, to make it interesting to readers and listeners, I know I've read reviews that are not only uninteresting, but condescending. Mm. And to the three of you, do we do the music any good with bitter critique?
No, not in my opinion. I think what our readers expect is to be pointed in the right direction. And I think that the challenge for us is to write in such a way that people can understand what they can expect from the music on the album. And so there are musicians who sometimes go beyond what is expected. John Zorn, for instance, is an example. He can have very tender and easy to understand music. He can also be completely beyond expectations, doing stuff that nobody's done before. So you have to warn readers for that. I mean, people have limited budgets to buy albums. And I think it's only fair to point them out that, you know, if this is not to your taste, don't buy it. So I think we have to point it out at times as well. But I think in general, people benefit from buying stuff that we like and that probably they like as well. So I think we receive a lot of reaction from our readers about the quality of the music. And very often it's in the same direction. So it's very rare that we have contrasting views on what people like.
Yeah. It's the same thing for me as a programmer. I'm not going to put on a release that I don't have my heart in. I mean, it's my opinion. It's my show. But I'm not going to put on something I don't like and then talk poorly about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it's not about us as the writer. Right. I mean, I think that there are certain properties and people, listeners who know what we write about and pay attention to that will be able to start seeing patterns, right? And stuff that we like. But you know, I'm not writing a review about me. I'm writing a review about this music. And yeah.
And I think one of the things that is we want to give an impression of what the music sounds like. I think that is the critical thing. We don't judge albums. And I think music that I like today, I would not have appreciated 10 years ago, even if it's in the same little universe and niche, because you get used to certain sounds, you get used to certain boundary-breaking ideas, and you grow with the music. You get some expectations. And
absolutely.
And I think that is something that changes over time. I mean, much of the music that I appreciated 20 years ago, today I find very mellow and superficial. So tastes change over time. And I think that is something that you have to accept, that it's a very subjective reaction that you have to something that is, yeah, very emotional and hard to put hard criteria against to evaluate.
If I might add to that, one thing that I try to always remind myself is that even if I do have a bad opinion of something, that I need to make sure that I don't make it prescriptive, that I frame it purely as an opinion, and to allow the reader room or the listener room to make their own judgment or opinion, should they choose to take the risk of, you know, listening to something that I've trashed, or, you know, which is very rare. But and I think with my project being ECM focused, you know, my goal is to review every album in the catalog, you know, which I have. And so sometimes I'm forced, so to speak, to listen to something I might not have chosen. But out of a catalog of over 1,500 albums, there are only two that I would fail to recommend. So I think that's a pretty good track record on their part and speaks to their selectiveness as a house, you know, of music.
Tyron, your book ECM Records, Between Sound and Space, was born out of your blog. I read that it took 6 years to complete. Is that correct?
It took 6 years to finally catch up to everything that ECM had released up until that point. And that was the point at which the publisher approached me. It was the very day that I announced reaching synchronicity with the label, having reviewed everything that they had released up until that point, that they reached out to me, because they had been reading quietly all along and approached me to do the book project.
Did you feel primed to write this based on your work as an English translator of Japanese fiction texts?
Yeah, because I see my music reviewing as going hand in hand with my work as a translator, because I'm also doing the work of a translator to articulate in words things that are entirely subjective and abstract and have no basis in physical reality. Of course, there are musicians and instruments, you know, those are physical, but what the music activates in me is beyond physical. So I do feel like there is a translation process at work and trying to render all of these feelings. As Paul was saying, you know, we don't want to use the same words all the time. And I don't think feelings are the same all the time. So it's a difficult match.
Yeah. Did you have the opportunity to meet some of the artists whose work you reviewed?
Yes, I've met some of them over the years at concerts and, you know, ECM themed events. There was also an ECM exhibition in Munich that I went to and was able to meet, you know, the label head and some other folks who work there. And so I have a very intimate experience with what ECM is all about. And that's another reason why it's very important to me to maintain that connection through my work.
In meeting them, was there a different perspective of who records for ECM?
I don't think so, because unlike certain labels, nobody is contractually obligated to be a part of the label. Many artists who record with them tend to stick with them for a variety of reasons, but there is no legal or contractual obligation to do so. So it is a place of comfort, though, I think, for those who do record with them, because there is a certain level of listening and involvement that they might not experience elsewhere. And it doesn't mean it's better or worse. It's just simply a difference of space and how that space is articulated for the musicians.
Good. Tyrion, I have your book. I ordered it when it came out and was available worldwide.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I think it's really nice and really, really nice. I have a certain level of, since this is not professional, I just have a little level of jealousy. I mean, I wish I want to make one too. It's a really nice book.
Yeah, thank you.
We'll return to part two after some music.
Thank you.
from pianist Vijay Iyer's second trio album on ECM Records, Uneasy. From it we heard Entrustment. Tyshawn Suri on drums and Linda May Han Oh on double bass. And from drummer Thomas Stronen, pianist Ayumi Tanaka, and clarinetist, singer, and percussionist Marth Leah. The release of this year, Bayou, is on ECM Records. We listen to DWYN. Their release came together, quote, as an open-form rehearsal and sound research project, drifting between elements of contemporary classical music, folk music, jazz, and what came to inspire them. You're listening to Situation Fluxus on WGXC 90.7 FM, listener supported radio for open ears. I'm your host, Cheryl Kay. Please send your comments, quips, and anecdotes, as well as feedback to thejazzdisturbance@gmail.com. info@wgxc.org, feedback@wgxc.org, or leave a 3-minute message at area code 518-291-WGXC. Our website is wgxc.org. And now for part two of my conversation with Tyron Grillo, author of the blog Between Sound and Space, ECM Records and Beyond, and Steph Schlesel and Paul Aquero, founder and editor, and manager and editor, respectively, of the Free Jazz Collective. All right, Paul and Steph, how much of your time is spent prompting writers to get their stuff in on time?
That's what I do, I think. And I am on email. I mean, we have a blog email account. Both Steph and I check this account, and it's really the kind of the nerve center of the blog, since, you know, we're in different places in the world. In fact, our writers are as well. We have writers in the US, we have writers in Europe, we have a writer works with us from the Middle East. So we really try to connect a lot, and basically it's connecting through email. And we try to give the writers as much, you know, time and flexibility as they want. There's really no deadlines, so to speak. It's as things come in. So it's more like making sure that things are flowing. It's like a giant Kanban board for those in project management. It's just making sure that stuff is flowing in. And so sometimes, and I hate doing it, but I had to send emails out saying, hey guys, you know, the flow, you know, we need some more. And then it's just kind of gentle reminders, because everyone here is a volunteer. Everyone's doing it for their own passion and their interest in the music. So I mean, I'm not going to, there's no whips to crack, so to speak.
But the only moments when we have deadlines is when we have feature series.
Yeah,
like, exactly. You know, a week on guitar in free improvisation. So at that time, we have volunteers writing about the new albums coming out on that label, or, you know, when last year, when a certain musician, or this year, turns 80 or 60, we want to do a special feature on them. So we have multiple people writing at the same time too. And then, of course, they have to be in time in delivering their material, because mm-hmm. it has to be published on the same day. Otherwise, we just, to a certain extent, go with the flow and make sure mm-hmm. that there is a balance between the writers, the styles of music, and things like that.
Yeah. And Tyron, how are you with your own deadlines?
I've suffered greatly since having a third child last year in my music writing productivity. I'm also a professor, so I put a lot of work into my teaching as well. And the combination of all of those things, you know, takes up a lot of my time. So I don't listen or write as voraciously as I used to, unfortunately, but I try to do my best.
Try cats. Cats are much more manageable than children. And yes, I am a slave to my cat's schedule, but, you know, she's a little more flexible than a child. Try cats. That's all I have to say. Yeah.
I don't know if you can make that decision now.
That's tough. Can't give them back.
That's right. Why aren't you a cat? Sorry, you can cut that part out.
No, I like that. All right, to the three of you, let's talk about the democratization of blogging. Is every blogger a Rhodes Scholar? No. In your opinion, should anyone be blogging about jazz and improvised music who wants to?
They could write for us. That would be my offer.
So this is a call to action from Paul.
That's right. I'll take it wherever I can get it. I think it's in everyone's power to do so, in the sense like there is the internet, right? And everyone's a publisher. Or can be a publisher. Whether everyone should be, likely not. I don't think that everyone has the same sensitivities to writing and what it is, or would approach it in a way that's positive for the artists or helpful for the artists. But I don't know. That's my thought.
I think when I started, Paul knows the story. My children were in their teens and they challenged me, said, nobody in the world listens to the music you listen to and you're a digital illiterate. And so I wanted to prove them wrong on both counts. And so I said, I'll show you. And today we have more than 14 million unique visitors to our blog. So somehow it did work. And I think that's the result of this technology that, you know, was at, you know, at my fingertips at that time. Mm-hmm. I think that's, you know, an example of that things might grow out of, you know, the many initiatives that people have. Somehow it got traction among an audience. And we're lucky to have people like Paul who listened to and read quite early on and was willing to participate in making it even more successful. But I think that is the real thing and the power of it. Internet reaches everybody and there's always an audience if your message resonates with them. They will keep coming back to your blog. And in the beginning, it was frustrating because you can count how many people actually view it. And you talk about tens of people. You know, our end of year list last year had 270,000 viewers. So somehow it does strike a nerve among the readers and fans of free jazz.
And I think for me, to go back to what Paul was mentioning at first, I would always recommend that anyone who wants to blog about music find a venue in which to publish their work in addition to the blogging. There's a certain freedom that I can take with my own blogging that I wouldn't necessarily when writing for a publication. But I can say without a doubt that writing for the various magazines that I have, both print and online, has made me a far better writer. Because when my audiences are diversified, then it also forces me to write differently depending on those audiences and to choose my words more carefully. And then when I go back to my own writing, I find that those strategies are still there and they help me to refine my own voice.
I think that's a great point. I think that having an editor that you're working with or having even just the notion that I'm not just publishing this, but I'm publishing this with other people just makes it much more, you pay more attention to your writing.
Definitely.
And I think also the advantage is that we provide access to the new material. So obviously all the reviewers do not necessarily receive all the albums that we receive. So we have a central repository where all the different reviewers can identify among of the whole list of everything we received, what they would like to review. Mm-hmm. So they can identify and specify their interest.
And that's also another practical advantage for the writer, because we're people too, who have jobs and possibly families or cats to support. So we can't buy everything that we want to listen to necessarily either. So having a magazine is sort of a proxy to filter and select things for us and pass those along is also a great connection to have, because it's, you know, not only sharing a love for the music, but it's also sharing the music itself, you know. And that to me is also a gift, you know, being able to get free music is a gift. You know, I'm not a musician myself, but I understand the level of work and production and sweat and tears that go into every album. And so being able to give that music to somebody else for free, I believe I should accept it in that same spirit and therefore do my best to write about it because it was given to me. You know, I didn't actually go out and purchase it in most cases. So I also need to do something with as much effort as possible to return that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you read any other bloggers?
Loaded question.
It is?
Yeah. If we said no, then all the people that we know who blog will be like, oh, you don't read my blog, I read your blog. I'm joking with you. I've actually read Tyron's blog over the years. It's helped guide me when I've stumbled upon an ECM album that I don't know. And yeah, I definitely read other blogs. I'll turn this over to Steph.
I do, but not in a systematic way. Mm-hmm. So what I do, of course, to review is to research, do some research on the musician before. And obviously, whether you want to or not, because of Google, you connect to what other people have written about the music. And even if you don't want to be influenced by it, I think it's always interesting to read. Some bloggers have interviews with musicians that can be very interesting to some perspective on reviews that we write or albums that were reviewed in the past that I was not familiar with. It's interesting to read what other people think of that. So yes, I think it's almost inevitable that you get in contact, even if it's, in my personal experience, not a systematic thing. It just happens, you know, when you browse the internet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm the same way. As a programmer, if I have an artist that I want to play, I want to do some research, there might be a timely bit of information that I feel that my listeners would like to know. So I do, not a lot, but I do.
Yeah, I'm the same as well. Sorry, I cut you off, Paul. I just sort of do it by association. You know, I don't systematically seek out particular sources of information. And plus it's just, again, a time issue. I used to read certain blogs quite regularly back in the day when I was first starting it myself, because they were a great source of inspiration for me as well, just to see how one does it, you know, as an art form or as a genre. But just because of time constraints, I tend to read a lot less than I used to. And mostly it's looking at other reviews and whatever publications I'm appearing in, because I like to see the context, you know, and also see what other people are interested in, because my interests are so specialized, I feel like, but then other people's are specialized in very different ways. And that's interesting for me as well.
Mm-hmm. I think social media really helps in this situation, because, you know, if I have all the different publications that I would read liked in, say, Facebook, and, you know, as I scroll through the day, I'll be interested in read about something. So I think it's not so much the systematic reading, but just kind of it being brought to your attention. That's a real driver for me, reading other blogs.
What advice can you give to someone interested in blogging about free and avant-garde music?
You really have to love it. Otherwise, it doesn't work. It has to be a passion. I think the energy has to come from the music to the writing. You have to be passionate about what you're doing. I think that's the only advice. And I think that's for any blogger almost. I mean, whether you're in fashion or, you know, clothing for children, whatever, it has to be or cats, it has to be a passion. Otherwise you have to keep up. I think you have to have frequency. Otherwise people just log off and don't come back anymore. So you need to create a sense of repetition, frequency. And that means that you have to do it almost on a daily basis. At least that works in our situation. If you have gaps of a week or 2 weeks, people do not come back anymore. So I think that's one of the elements that I think is absolutely critical. Passion and discipline.
I think it's openness, willing to learn about new music, new musicians, and letting that also just kind of be that passion, right? Not getting stuck with one musician, one type of style, but let your make associations. Like, see, you know, oh, this person plays with this person. Let me check out what that person does and see these connections and let that guide you in a sense.
I would add to that as well that I think when writing about free music, I would say don't be afraid to talk about how it makes you feel personally. Because to me, free jazz especially is such a deeply personal experience. And I love it for that reason. It's going to affect me in a way that is so intimate and visceral. And so I want to do away with my fear of communicating that. Because I think as writers, we're often taught, don't use I in a review or, in an academic essay or whatever it might be. I think we're constantly taught to weed the self out of the equation, right? But I think for me anyway, I love to see writing about free music that is really invested. And I guess that comes from passion too, right? And also an interest in the musicians, because that's how you're connecting with it on a human level.
I've been trained not to use the word beautiful, for instance.
Oh, yeah.
But yes, because they say it doesn't mean anything. Mm. You may find it beautiful, but somebody else will not find it beautiful. So it's a meaningless word to use. But I think the contrary. I think if you think that it's beautiful, say mm-hmm. it.
Yeah, and it's how you say it. It's the words you use around it. It's the inflection in your voice. It's so many things around that word. It may be overused, but it's the way you use it and how you communicate it to your listeners. Right. So I don't have a problem with the word beautiful. It's beautiful. So, all right, gentlemen, I always give my guests the last word. Is there something I didn't ask you that you'd like to express? An upcoming project that you'd like us to know about?
No, I think upcoming for the blog, I mean, there's always something upcoming. And with our blog, it's very organic what's upcoming. It's what people are interested in writing about, and the writers bring ideas to it. Someone else mentioned, there's a scene in Berlin called the Excite music scene. And they're having their 30th anniversary this year. It was born right after the end of the wall falling down and musicians coming together. And so that's just a whole other, thing that just started growing naturally. So I don't know, that's sort of an extension of the free jazz, free improvisation and improvising as we go along. So those are some things coming up from my point of view.
Yeah, from my perspective, I think our readership is constantly growing, which I find fantastic because I thought we already covered the universe of people interested in this type of music. But apparently we have a broader reach or the interest in avant-garde and free jazz is increasing. And I think what I find fascinating is that we see a young generation of young musicians, male and especially female, making music that is abstract and not following the path of education and the linear movement or the harmonic movement that they've been trained in. So I think this is a fascinating experience, and they have less boundaries and stylistic restrictions than we often have. So some of them say explicitly they want to unlearn what they've learned just to have a broader and more open perspective on things that are more universal and resonate with people across the world. So I think that type of new generation with their new ideas, I think, fascinating to follow. And I think that is something that is hopefully growing the music and making it more popular than it currently is.
And I think on my end, there is possibly a follow-up ECM book in the works, although the talks are very vague. So we will see if that materializes. There's also a few side projects that I'm hoping to do for my blog. One of which is to translate every Japanese liner note ever written for Japan only releases of ECM records. I've done a couple of them for various reviews, but I would like to gather all of those texts and perhaps make something of an archive of them, because Japanese jazz critics have a sort of different tradition that they're drawing on when they're writing about these albums. And that's a whole set of text that's not being engaged with, you know, just purely because of a linguistic barrier. And then I'm also, you know, of course, an academic. So I have my dissertation turned into a manuscript, which is currently under review. So that might be hitting the airwaves at some point. And we'll be very glad to see that out in the world after spending 7 years on it in grad school.
Great. That sounds fascinating.
Yeah. So Steph, we need to get a book out.
Yeah, I think so. We'll split it in half. You do 3 years and a half and I do 3 years and a half.
I actually think that would be an incredibly important project though, because I feel like so many people are so afraid to touch free jazz. And I think what you guys are doing is so vital. And I think the readership obviously reflects that importance, you know. But I think having a book is such a gratifying thing to just have in hand, you know, to be able to give to people. I think maybe the challenge is, you know, how do you encapsulate something so incredibly immense in a
way? Well, I bet it's hard. Yeah. It's probably hard for you to choose what you would put into your book.
Yeah, it was. The publisher also had their own ideas, so sort of a collaboration about what we chose. But yeah, I mean, how do you represent over 40 years of history, you know, and only 100 reviews? So, totally love to see a book come out of what you guys are doing, though. I think it would be incredibly important. And if you need an editor, I'm here.
Okay, and a Japanese translator.
Yeah, okay. That might be a good way. Yeah, okay. It's a good idea. It's coming together. See, it's organic. It's growing.
For more information on Tyron Grillo, ecmreviews.com. And for more information on the Free Jazz Collective, freejazzblog.org. Thank you for tuning in to Situation Fluxus on WGXC, 90.7 FM, listener-supported radio for open ears. I've been your host, Cheryl Kay. Tune in next Thursday at 10 a.m. for another show. I also host the Jazz Disturbance on the 1st, 2nd, 3rd, and 5th Sunday of each month from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. To contact us about Situation Fluxus, thejazzdisturbance@gmail.com or info@wgxc.org. We appreciate your feedback. Feedback@wgxc.org or leave a 3-minute message at area code 518-291-WGXC. Thank you.